Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Like we're going to be starting a little bit shorter than we usually do tonight here, unfortunately. And right as I say that, impeccable timing as always, Tony. Tony.
Yo.
Impeccable timing as always.
Oh, thanks.
Good evening and welcome to the reaction. I almost said the wrong reaction out of, what would you say that would be, out of reflex? To the reflexive reaction. Try this again. Good evening and welcome to the reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst, even if I don't know the name of the damn show. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
Hi.
And the returning co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Puglisi. Gonna have to speak up a little bit, Liz.
Oh, sorry. Hello.
All right. First of all, how's everyone's weekend, Tony?
I had our bar now has the UFC fights, so that was fun. Not to mention the playoffs.
I feel like that would just be a bunch of drunken assholes in there on Saturday night for the UFC pay-per-view.
You know, I was pleasantly surprised. A lot of the people there were our regulars, and a bunch of our regulars are pretty cool people. So they kind of crowded it before anybody else could. It ended up being a good weekend. It was just a super busy one.
Well, yeah, Los Angeles, California team in the NFC Championship game, and now heading to the Super Bowl in 2 weeks here. I'm imagining that Super Bowl Sunday is going to be hella busy for the bar now.
Yeah, we hope so.
How was your weekend, Miss Liz?
I was quiet, boring, perfect.
Quiet, much like Liz herself right now. I can barely hear you. Try now. I got to figure out if there's a way to adjust her audio button because she's barely... Tony, are you hearing what she's saying?
Yeah, it's very low.
I don't know why.
Okay. Okay, see, that I heard. Anyway, couple of things to discuss. Obviously, this is the go-home episode of Monday Night Raw for the Royal Rumble, so we'll kind of make some Royal Rumble predictions. Obviously, the go-home episode of SmackDown still hasn't happened yet, which is one of the disadvantages of doing these prediction shows when we cover both Raw and SmackDown now, in that doing them on Mondays means that we miss the go-home episode of SmackDown before the pay-per-views. I mean, we were missing it before, but it was a little bit easier when we weren't covering SmackDown. Now that we are, we kind of miss a piece of the puzzle. Tony, if you had to pick one match at the Rumble besides the Rumble itself that you're looking forward to, what would it be?
The Rumble.
Okay, let's try this again. Let's try cleaning out our ears this time. If you had to pick one match besides the Rumble, what match would it be?
I'm not interested in anything else.
So the other 4 hours will be spent listening to the new Eminem album that dropped on Friday?
Oh, no. I've spent plenty of time doing that. No, I'll watch it. It doesn't mean I'm interested in it. I just have to do it for the sake of being a, doing this show.
We've talked about that many times on the show before, that you're not entirely sure you'd still be watching if you weren't doing this podcast in the Raw Report.
Yeah, I probably would have fell off a while ago.
Liz, is there any particular match that has your interest for this weekend at the Rumble?
If I have to pick, I'd probably go with Roman's Aaron, just because I'm a fan of both sides. But it's kind of all about the Rumble. I'm not even sure, to be honest, what else there is other than those two matches.
The two Rumbles, Corbin and Roman in The Last Man Standing, we'll get to that in a few seconds. Bray Wyatt and Daniel Bryan in a strap match, because that needed to be brought back in the 21st century. I'm sure there's a couple others announced, but I'm going to have to go look into it. I'm actually really excited about the Win Worlds Collide card for the Saturday before the Rumble, taking the place of what would have been NXT TakeOver, but TakeOver got moved to February, and we'll talk about that when that time comes. We might do a little bit about Win Worlds Collide at the end of the show here. Tony, I don't know how much NXT you do and don't watch. I'm guessing not a ton, given your work schedule.
Yes, that's very true.
And I'm thinking Liz probably doesn't. Liz watches a little bit here and there, but I know she's not as big into NXT as she is the other two brands.
Yeah, I mainly follow it online.
Thanks to TheChairShot.com, Stephen Mitchell.
Absolutely.
Shout out to Stephen. All right, let's get over to Friday Night SmackDown here, and let's get tonight's episode of the show started with the actual coverage portion of the show here. And the first thing that I want to talk about is our opening contest, which was scheduled for, never mind, old bit, not bringing it back. The in-ring return after 8 years absence to the WWE ring for... I'm going to punch him one of these days. The in-ring return after 8 years absence in the WWE of John Morrison as he took on Big E. Tony, we talked about this last week when it was just the two of us. And we discussed the possibility of them doing the New Day versus The Miz and John Morrison at the Royal Rumble here. After seeing Morrison get the pin on Big E on Friday on SmackDown, scale of 1 to 10, what would you put the odds of them announcing the tag team title match on Friday for the Rumble pre-show or the main show?
I mean, last week I said it wasn't going to happen. This week it seems like it's a bit more likely, so I'll say 7.
Liz, same question. Scale of 1 to 10, what do you think are the odds of New Day versus Dirt Sheet at the Rumble for the SmackDown tag titles? Echo.
I'm going to go with a 5. I think it's too early to do it with Morrison, but they do have that habit of what happens on Raw happens on SmackDown, so they're going to change the title, so who knows. But I'm going to go with a 5. I think it's too early.
Well, I don't necessarily know that we'll see the titles change on SmackDown. I think it would be more likely I'm getting a bad echo, Liz.
I don't know. I don't have anything on. I don't know what to say.
Let me try something here real quick on my end. Welcome to the technical difficulty episode of The Reaction here. All right, let's try this real quick here. All right, let's see if I can't hear myself. Yeah, all right, that explains it. Yeah, I think I'm picking myself up in your headphones again, Liz.
Man, I'll tell you.
Oh, now it's on, though, so we're good.
Yeah, because it's my headphones. I don't know what to tell you because it's hard for me to hold the phone for like an hour.
The echo's gone and you sound louder, so resetting your microphone seems to have worked.
No, because I took it off. I took the headphones off, but it's a pain in the ass for me not to wear them and have to hold the phone, but let's just go on.
I'm sorry. You can try to put the headphones back on. We'll figure it out.
No, it's all right.
All right, anyway.
I don't want to hear it. Let's just move on.
Now I feel like she's mad at me. Okay, let's move on here real quick here. Back to the SmackDown Tag Team Division. Are you surprised to see them immediately put Miz and Morrison back into the tag team title mix on SmackDown, given the lack of, I would argue, main event level talent on the SmackDown brand right now, outside of guys like Bryan, Wyatt, and Roman? Tony?
Oh, sorry, what was the original question? I heard the end there.
The original question is, are you surprised to see them moving Miz and Morrison into the tag division, given the lack of upper mid-card to main event level talent on SmackDown right now?
Oh, you know, I think for whatever reason, maybe it was Miz and Morrison's, like, request, and if it was, then I guess this is completely wrong, but I think for whatever reason they attached the Miz to him because they don't think that, you know, he's capable of handling it on his own. That's neither positive or negative. I'm not going to put a stank on it, but I think that because of that, you know, they're a tag team because I think that they both can – I mean, I've said it before, anybody can be in the main event, almost anybody, as long as they're written correctly. So I don't think it's a loss per se, but it's also not, you know, excuse me, sorry about that. It's also not the most linear of movements.
Liz, same question. Are you surprised that they put Miz and Morrison together as a tag team given the lack of main event level players on SmackDown right now?
Yes, I am actually. I didn't really see it, you know, coming or expected. I don't actually. I don't even know if I really see them as a tag team rather than two guys that are forming a two person group there at the moment. Working against the New Day, I guess time will tell how far they actually go with the tag team aspect of it. But considering, I guess it makes more sense for Miz to be in a tag team after his sort of lackluster feuds of the last, you know, few months. Not completely his fault because I think he's been pretty great. But I'm surprised that they put Morrison in a tag team so quickly.
I think part of the reason might be the fact that Morrison had a significant amount of heat on him in his last time with the company, and this is kind of him earning his stripes back, I would say. But I would argue that the heat that Morrison had on himself the last time he was with the company had as much to do with his girlfriend, fiance, whatever she was at the time then, compared to anything Morrison himself actually did. We'll move on here, though. The main event is what Liz is going to want to discuss here because it actually sets us up for that match that she was just referring to a little bit ago with Roman Reigns and Baron Corbin at the Royal Rumble. The main event of SmackDown was Roman Reigns taking on Robert Roode in a tables match, and the winner of that match, Roman or Roode, determined who made the stipulation for the match between Roman and Baron Corbin at the Rumble. Obviously, Roman wins and sets us up for him to make the announcement that at the Astros Stadium, I forget what it's called now, it's changed names like five times since it was first debuted. I think like at one point it was like Enron and then it was Enfield and then it's like, I don't even know what it is nowadays. But anyway, Roman says that there's a whole lot of stadium there and all the more places for him to beat Baron Corbin's ass, so he wants a false count anywhere match.
Yeah,
Tony,
it would make sense that it was called the Enron. I think it's called the Cheater Dome now. Is that what it's called?
Bankruptcy Ballpark? Seriously, how did those motherfuckers get to keep their ring, but Pete Rose can't get into the Hall of... Anyways, moving on. C- Tony freaking threw me with that. All right. Liz.
Yes.
Are you surprised? Yes. Are you surprised on a show with two Royal Rumbles and a previously announced strap match for the SmackDown Heavyweight Championship, but they added yet another stipulated match to the card in this instance with Roman and Baron?
I was a little surprised that they added the strap match, since I think I could be wrong. I was aware that they were having a stipulation for this match before the Fiend and Daniel. I think as much as I'm looking forward to the match again, only because I like the two wrestlers, I think the stipulation is idiotic. I think they could have come up with something better. I never really liked false counts anywhere matches. A lot of them tend to fall into, you know, too many comedy aspects for my liking, but that's just me. And tend to be very, very drawn out, in my opinion. So I think they could have found a better stipulation.
Tony, same question. Are you okay with the false count anywhere stipulation, or do you feel like they needed to, they should have scaled it up a little bit more for a marquee event such as the Rumble, especially coming off of an admittedly pretty lackluster tables, ladders, and chairs match at TLC in December?
Nobody cares about the undercard. So no, I don't. I have no. So I don't think anyone is going to be mad that they have a false count anywhere match. I don't think that they'd be mad if they had a match because they don't care about it. They're waiting for the Royal Rumble.
Roman Reigns has announced that he's going to be in the Rumble as well, so I'm going to argue that this match might lead off the show. Liz, what do you think here? What match do you think will lead off the show? Do you think they'll open with the Women's Rumble, or do you think they'll open with this one to give Roman time before the Men's Rumble?
I actually looked up the match list earlier, and apparently Chad and Sheamus are having a match, and Lacey and Bailey, so I'm actually going to say one of those two matches kick it off.
I wouldn't be surprised to see Chad Gable and Sheamus end up on the pre-show.
On the pre-show,
and I don't
about the pre-show.
And I don't say that as a slight to Chad and Sheamus, because this would be Sheamus' first official match back in the ring, coming back from his neck surgery. But I think on a loaded card such as the Rumble, there's only going to be so much time to fit so many matches on there. Plus, we don't have anything announced for Monday Night Raw, even after tonight's show, which I think is stupid, but we'll get to that in a little bit. All right, let's go through quick hits for Friday Night SmackDown here. Opening segment sees Kane come back and talk to the crowd about the Royal Rumble event, and it appears that Kane might be about to declare himself as an entrant into the 2020 Royal Rumble when the Firefly Funhouse interrupts. Bray Wyatt lets us know that Ramblin' Rabbit is alive and well and on life support, being fed carrot juice through an IV tube, which I thought was funny. And then eventually Wyatt gets around to the fact that Kane's going to pay for what it is that Kane did, and they show a little flashback to the Inferno match that Wyatt and Kane had at SummerSlam a couple of years back. The Fiend shows up in the ring, and the first person not to really be afraid of the Fiend is Kane, as he says, "What took you so long?" And Brian comes in through the crowd to attack Kane and send the Fiend escaping through the hole in the ring that he came up into the ring through here. Tony, we've talked about people you having to play the psychological war game with the Fiend Bray Wyatt in order to escape kind of the mind games aspect of the character before. Were you surprised to see that it was Kane to be the first person to not succumb to the mind games of the Fiend?
No, I mean, it makes sense. It's one of the few things that have made sense over the past week. It was simple. It wasn't overbearing. It wasn't something like, oh my God, it's Kane. He's an old timer. He shouldn't be getting the upper hand. It was just, it makes sense. It's fucking Kane, the supposed king of mind games. It was a cool segment all around. Brian and Kane have a history. Kane knew it was going to happen. He literally said, "I've been waiting for you. It took you long enough." So it was all just a nice way to let people know that, you know, there is a way to get the upper hand. You just have to be fucking nuts and a mayor.
The mayor's an extra added bonus. Liz, same question. Were you surprised that the first person to get the jump on the Fiend trying to attack somebody was Kane?
No, I can't really add anything else to what Tony has said, but with the history of Kane, I think it makes sense that you wouldn't have somebody like him cower to the Fiend.
I appreciate the idea. See, that yawning is contagious, Tony. I appreciate the idea behind the strap match between between Bryan and Wyatt at the Royal Rumble, but I feel like this is a time where the stipulation pay-per-views and the stipulation matches occurring at certain pay-per-views come back to bite the company here. Because if you really wanted to do a situation with the whole keeping them away from running away from each other thing, then why wouldn't you do something like a cage match or something like a Hell in a Cell match, whereas obviously it's not October, so it can't be a Hell in a Cell match. Do you think the stipulation pay-per-views kind of limits the availability for the options that they have in order to settle these feuds, Liz?
Not if it's done right. I mean, I don't have a problem with the strap match. I was pretty hyped when I heard it. For me, that's pretty old school with a lot of the stuff that I grew up watching from like WCCW and different things like that. So if it's done right, it can be a pretty great match. And I think the two of them have the ability to pull it off. I think a lot of people have problems with the stipulation matches. Just what we usually get is, you know, some one of the TLC matches or a Hell in a Cell match, which doesn't even like really make anybody pop anymore. So when they hear something else, like I'm not thrilled with the Tools Kelly, because I just always think they're stupid. Excuse me. But I think people are just, I don't know what the right word is. I think some of them just have been so lackluster lately that people are kind of like, another stipulation match. But I think it just needs one really good one to get people going.
Tony, same question. Do you think the stipulation pay-per-views hurt the ability to organically build towards matches that should end feuds like Hell in a Cell or like a straight-up cage match for Wyatt and Bryan?
I think it's not the pay-per-views. It's their inability to use them properly. They create rules and then they go against the rules. They have cage matches where people literally don't even touch the cage. They have matches where they claim that it's a be-all, end-all of everything, a match where, you know, people can't run away from one another. And then they have a match where they run away from each other. They have a match called the first fist fight ever, and it starts with kendo sticks. They sell us something, and they give us something else. So it has nothing to do with the pay-per-view name specifically, because you can have a Hell in the Cell match right now, and people would believe it if it was done for the right reasons, and they wouldn't get mad or say, like, you could only do this in October. It's all their fault. It's always their fault.
You sound like a bunch of curmudgeons. Speaking of curmudgeons, the Revival yet again lose. As the Usos pick up a victory in 5 minutes and 10 seconds when Jimmy Payne's dash, I believe, with a top rope splash. Post-match, the Revival cut a promo saying that something needs to change in the WWE, and either the WWE needs to start respecting them and the tag team division. Tony, they're gone in 4 months, right?
I mean, I guess. But, I mean, even a promo like that doesn't mean shit, because when you do things like this, there has to be an end game. There has to be that to me is a call to action. And in any story, any book, any movie, the call to action is followed up with action. It's followed up with an actual result, and it's followed up with an ending that is of complete benefit of the call to action. That doesn't happen in the WWE. We have people that proclaim things, and then nothing happens afterwards. They kind of wither away, or they end up getting their asses kicked, like Ricochet did tonight. This segment is nothing to me. That this is something that doesn't mean anything now, didn't mean anything 2 months ago, didn't mean anything the last time they said the exact same words, and won't mean anything later.
Liz? Do you think the Revival stick around, or are they pretty much goners at this point?
I don't honestly care. I mean, they're great. Excuse me. you know, they're great in-ring technicians and all that. I'm sure they're great guys. I don't obviously know them. None of us do. But they never really like clicked with me. I never really bought into all of their hype. Again, I'm not saying that they're not great. They are. I know that. But I think people forget that if there's anything that the company or the individual wrestlers are very good at is playing the fans, you know, so who knows what it means. It could mean absolutely nothing. Everybody's like, oh, the Revival's leaving. Oh, the Revival's not used right. Oh, you know, it's the Revival, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, they're going to use that to their advantage. It wouldn't be the, you know, first time. It creates buzz. I don't really think it means anything. I think it's a lot more of the fans being like, oh, this one's unhappy, and now they have AEW to go to, which is great, absolutely fabulous. I'm glad that all these guys have so, and women have so many options. I don't think that means anything, because they're all very good at playing the fans and using crap from social media to get, you know, everybody riled up and make them think they were right when they're not.
It was yet again supposed to be Lacey versus Sasha Banks, but Sasha Banks has contracted a boo-boo on her ankle and is unable to compete. Tony, you have a thing for fragile chicks.
Yeah, well.
Although I will say, I did see a video with, I was listening to the New Day podcast, and Big E talks about thwacking AJ Lee on the entrance the one time. And AJ took that like a champ.
Yes, he did.
Okay, while Tony's incapacitated for a few seconds, Liz, I'll go to you first for this here. Yet again, Bayley ends up stepping in for Sasha Banks, and it's a non-title match as Bayley takes on Lacey Evans. Lacey gets the pinfall with the women's right to set up the women's title match. By herself, Lacey's better as a babyface than she was as a heel on Raw.
Yeah, I mean, it was an okay match. I wasn't surprised that she won. Was maybe slightly disappointed because I was rooting for Bayley. But definitely wasn't surprised. I mean, the match wasn't anything amazing that I think both women are probably capable of. I really haven't enjoyed the whole Southern Belle character, because I am a cranky curmudgeon person. This doesn't do anything for me. It just seems odd to me. I don't know why, but at least the person seems pretty awesome. That's the damn truth. But it was an okay match. It furthers along what they're, you know, whatever the heck it is that they're aiming for.
Tony, we've talked about this a lot with when Andrew Balazs was the third man on the show here about his love of all things Lacey in general. Would you say that Lacey's gotten better? She's more natural with the babyface role that she has on SmackDown now than she was on Raw?
I will say that she is performing better. That doesn't mean that she's good. She's simply better than she was. But I suppose that's all you could ask for in a person who, you know, hasn't been wrestling for all that long. I don't know. Again, it's a character that would have been very hard to translate well from NXT to Raw, and it's found a nice little spot in SmackDown, but I don't know. I've always been a little iffy on the involvement of family members and just, yeah, and I don't know. It kind of takes me out of it.
Elias has a concert that's interrupted by Shinsuke, Cesaro, and Sami Zayn. They eventually come down to the ring to attack Elias. Braun Strowman makes the save. I feel like that sets up for the Teddy Long special this week on SmackDown. It's a tag match, player, coming to next week's episode of the Reaction Discussion here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Alexa Bliss and Sonya Deville go one-on-one. Otis Tucker, Nikki Cross, and Mandy Rose. I just conjoined Nikki and Mandy into one person there. Otis Tucker, Nikki Cross, and Mandy Rose all at ringside. Jesus, what the fuck is wrong with me tonight? Ringside for this contest. Eventually, Mandy's up on the apron. Alexa knocks her off the apron, and Otis catches her. This distracts Sonya long enough for Alexa to catch Sonya with a roll-up and the three count at 2 minutes. I just spent more time describing what was happening on the ring and around the ring and stumbling over it than the match itself lasted. I don't even have a question here. What are your thoughts overall, Liz?
It was like you blinked and it was over. I mean, I've freely admitted that I'm generally fairly distracted sometimes during the shows, so I miss things. But for that one, I was like, I was sitting there watching it, and I felt like I missed something because it just seemed to, like, randomly end so quick. I enjoy the Otis Bandy thing, and I think Otis is, like, a friggin' national treasure because he carries that throughout, like, every interview, every video, like, he's in Up, Up, Down, Down, the Celtic Warrior. He just, like, keeps it up, and it's friggin' awesome. The match itself was, like, I don't even remember it. They were just talking up the Otis and Mandy thing, like so much, like, you didn't even realize there was, for me, there was, like, actually a match, you know, going on. So, I mean, some of it's, like, a cute little filler, and some of it's, like, what did I miss? You know, and is it important? And obviously not.
Tony, your thoughts on where they're at and where they're going with the Otis Mandy Sonya storyline?
I mean, it appears that we're going with the inevitable breakup that nobody ever asked for, no one's going to care about with the females. And the whole lovable oof thing, I think I've talked about quite a few times. It's just, it's cliche television, which can work with the right writing, and they don't have it.
That officially wraps up everything there was to discuss on SmackDown, as the main event was the aforementioned Roman and Baron Corbin match. We move over to Monday Night Raw now. And the first talking point that I had for Monday Night Raw actually led off the show, as it is the fallout of Buddy Murphy joining up with Seth Rollins and the AOP. Rollins cuts a promo to start the show to discuss the happenings and the fact that Murphy has seen the light and joined up with the Monday Night Messiah. They are then interrupted by Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens, who see things a little bit differently than what Seth Rollins does, and challenge Rollins and company to a fight. Rollins says, if you're dumb enough to come down here 4-on-2, then so be it. Let's do this. Joe points out that Rollins doesn't listen and never said that they were coming alone, and that brings out the Viking Raiders, the Raw Tag Team Champions, which seems like a way to kind of shoehorn them into this whole situation. It eventually does lead to a Raw Tag Team title match tonight, as the Viking Raiders defend the Raw Tag Team titles against the Authors of Pain. Oh, nope, that would make too much sense. Against Seth Rollins and Buddy Murphy, and we have new Raw Tag Team Champions when Seth Rollins hits the curb stomp on the apron on Eric, and Buddy Murphy gets the pin to give Seth and Buddy the tag team titles. Tony, are you surprised they hot shot at the titles over to Seth and Buddy tonight?
Yeah, but it wasn't like, oh my God. It was like, oh, what the fuck? When the Viking Raiders came out to help Joe and Owens, my immediate reaction was like, well, I mean, no one gives a shit about them. And then they lose the titles, and I think to myself, well, fuck, that was rude. So I felt hypocritical, because in the beginning of the show, I was like, well, you know, these guys don't matter, and we've talked about them not really mattering. All they've been doing is having squash matches. So why would it bother me that they lost the titles? And I think the answer lies in who they lost it to. I think that this is an attempt to make Seth Rollins important without having to give him the main belt, because as we've talked about before, that's busy doing nothing with Brock Lesnar. So these guys are fighting, and although there's something to be said here with the storyline, there's still something missing, and I think they fill that void with the belt. But what's bothersome is the AOP is right behind them when Seth's cutting that promo about, you know, we did it, boys. And I just can't help but think what any other tag team would be thinking at that moment. Like, why didn't we get this shot? What does this do for Seth Rollins? How does a self-proclaimed messiah, a leader of the many, put somebody like Buddy Murphy as his equal, and what does that do for him? I don't know. It was an interesting question to myself tonight when I asked whether I'm just going to be upset with everything they do, or this really is just bad writing.
I want the record to state that I'm not opposed to Seth and Buddy getting the tag team titles, but I feel like they kind of robbed Peter to pay Paul, as it were, because you had the obvious choice of the AOP right there, and then you could have Buddy chase after the secondary title once the time came to it. Again, I think the issue, like you mentioned, Tony, is the fact that the Raw Heavyweight Championship is then the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, I believe now, because the Universal title is over on SmackDown now, is so caught up and preoccupied with Brock Lesnar and his part-time schedule that the proper way to do a storyline like this with Rollins holding the heavyweight title and commanding everyone around him isn't possible right now because of the title being held up by Lesnar. Liz, I'll ask you the same question. Are you okay with Seth and Buddy winning the tag team titles here, or do you think that they took the spot that should have belonged to the AOP in this situation?
I mean, it's kind of backseat driving to say, you know, oh, whose shot it should have been. It doesn't really make any sense that it's not the AOP, but, you know, it's Seth, so how long are they going to, like, keep a title offer him? And then they couldn't really have him suddenly go after Andrade and ruin that whole thing, because Andrade definitely deserves to keep his title far away from that evil midget. And then you run the risk, if you had done something even stupider like that, then you run the whole risk of another comparison to the Shield, where one had that title and the other two were the tag team titles. I think my bigger issue at the moment is that it's Buddy Murphy, who was his, I mean, Seth has been tag team champion how many times now? So that's not so strange in itself. I mean, I think it's, for me, it's who his partner is, and I'm not knocking Buddy Murphy, but he just came off this pretty much losing streak with Alistair, and now he's a tag team champion. So I think that's the really odd part of it. I think if you had inserted somebody else in that spot, somebody who's had championships or even been a tag team championship or held the title on the other show, it would have been like, okay, these two guys who've been in the title picture for so long that they have the egos that the other two are going to be the muscle. But right now with Buddy and Seth being the tag team champions, you just feel like AOP is going to turn on them sooner rather than later.
The other thing that I wanted to discuss tonight was the Andrade and Rey Mysterio ladder match, which actually opened up the in-ring content of the show tonight. Tony, were you surprised that this match opened the show and wasn't the main event?
No, not really. I think that they, you know, wanted to enrapture the crowd immediately, both at home and in the arena, and they did. I think that the first hour of Raw wasn't bad. It was better than the rest of it. This match specifically, though, was kind of messy. Kind of dangerous.
I think that that's kind of the problem that these ladder matches inherently have, though, is that we've reached the point of diminishing returns on a lot of these spots, and they become more and more dangerous for the sake of popping the crowd, that they put the athletes at more and more risk. Rey Mysterio's sunset bomb into the ladder legitimately scared the fuck out of me. Liz, were you surprised that this match wasn't the...
frightens me even
more
when they don't do it right. I think that this match would have been spectacular, realistically. I think I counted more than like 5 mistakes, some of them a bit more dangerous than the others. So this isn't me telling them that I could do a better job. I sure as fuck can't. But I don't know. They're just kind of slightly off their game tonight. And if I'm reviewing the show, which is what this whole show is about, then I'm going to say that this just wasn't really up to par.
Well, let me ask you this, Tony. Do you think that if they would have had a little bit more time at, say, the Royal Rumble pay-per-view itself to deliver this match, that they would have been able to time out the match a little bit later and not have to worry about the commercial breaks to make it a more cohesive contest?
I mean, I wouldn't say it was a time thing as much as it was just you know, they just had an off night, mostly Ray, but even Andrade wasn't without his mistakes. You know, they just didn't have a... They had a couple of slight miscommunications, which probably caused a lot of fluster, which caused even more mistakes. I think it happens in any type of performance arena where, you know, instead of finding your footing, you just kind of, you know, tread water for the whole process. It happens a lot, especially when you're like performing. I mean, you just went through it, you know, with messing up your words. It happens.
Yeah, I kind of fucking sucked tonight, like I said in the group chat. Liz, same question that I just asked Tony. Do you think that having this match placed at the Rumble, where they would have had more time and not had to worry about getting stuff in between the commercial breaks, would have allowed them to take their time and tell a more cohesive story throughout the course of this match?
What show the match is on means absolutely nothing. I mean, how many pay-per-view table ladders or chairs matches or any Hell in a Cell, anything else that we've mentioned or haven't mentioned tonight, have we seen on pay-per-view that have absolutely sucked, where they've been given plenty of time and plenty of options to put on a stellar show, a stellar match, and it just didn't happen, at least to our, you know, standards or whatnot. I don't think that matters. I mean, you have an off night, you have an off night. It could happen, you know, it could happen anywhere. They could be given an hour for that, for the match, and who knows what it would be like. I'm not the biggest Ray fan. We all freaking know this by now. I actually get such hate for it, and that's fine. That's fine. I'm entitled not to like a character. But he had an off night. It wasn't their best match that we've seen them have. I don't catch a lot of the things that you guys catch. I've always, you know, said that, you know, for whatever reason, I just don't. But there were a couple of moments where you were like, okay, they're a little, you know, sloppy, they're a little off tonight. It could happen any night. We don't have a crystal ball to say, like, oh, if this match was at the Rumble, it would have been match of the year. Maybe it would have been worse. You know, they went out there and they did, you know, whatever. It wasn't a horrible match. Table matches are just so used so much that they constantly feel like they have to up the ante to still make them interesting.
Yeah, and I think that part of what plays into that whole the risk will equal the reward here, because they find themselves in a situation where they're doing these more and more dangerous spots. And in the process of trying the more and more dangerous stuff, not all of it's going to hit cleanly, and that increases the likelihood that either A, fans are going to be able to tell that you're fucking things up, or B, somebody's going to get seriously hurt. Like, I feared for both of their safety on the sunset bomb, because Ray clearly came off too early on that sunset bomb, and Andrade basically had to throw himself backwards through the ladder. In the end, though, Andrade and Harry in Fantasy Wrestling League pick up the victory. Suck it, Rick. As Andrade retains the U.S. title, he is then confronted by a returning Humberto Carrillo. So they're going to pay that off after Andrade DDT'd Carrillo on the exposed concrete. He went to do the same thing to Ray tonight. Carrillo made the save. They get into a brawl. Carrillo throwing some admittedly weak-looking punches, but they get into a brawl and then are separated, and Andrade and Zelina make their way to the back. Andrade's still the U.S. champion. Are you okay with him going back to Andrade and Carrillo, Liz?
No, I think it's getting... I don't know. I'm probably going to get some flack for this, but could he, like, fight somebody that's not also Hispanic, or are we just getting, like, this feud between everybody that's any type of Mexican, Hispanic, Latino, because it's going to get, like, for, like, who's the newest, hottest, greatest, you know, of that ethnic group. It's going to get, for me, it's going to get kind of old, not because they're Latino, Hispanic, or anything like that. It's just, like, can we move past it? I think Carrillo has the ability to become a pretty big, you know, pretty big star, maybe not top tier, you know, whatever. I don't know. I'm not a scout. I don't know these things. But I think it's getting kind of forced at the moment. And for me, my biggest issue with it just means if he fights with Carrillo, we're just going to get more fucking right, and I'm kind of need him to go away now.
Tony, are you okay with him going back to Andrade and Carrillo for the U.S. title now that Rey is apparently in the potential back burner?
Yeah, man, I love that three Mexicans fighting for Mexican heritage all around the United States Championship is on my TV every week. It's fucking amazing. You know,
I was
going to
make a joke
to
the next. Real quick, I was going to make a joke that Drew McIntyre should be the next challenger, so that way we could keep the United States title about all the non-Americans. Continue, Tony.
Yeah, that's fine. When you saw the masked person, did you for a slight second think that it was Dominic? And if you did, were you okay with that?
No, I did not. I immediately thought it was Carrillo. To answer your second question, I can't honestly give a proper answer to that because I haven't seen Dominic in the ring competing as an actual performer. I know he's been training for a while now, and I've heard good things about his performances, but I've never actually seen him compete. So until I'm actually able to watch him with my own eyes and then make a judgment call based on what I see from my own personal vision, I can't really speak as to whether or not I'd be okay with Dominic in that kind of a position.
Yeah, you know, I feel the same way, which is why I asked you. Kind of wanted to see what your thoughts were. Because I wasn't mad that it wasn't him, but I expected it to be him. And I'm not 100% sure that I would have been okay with it, but also I'm not too sure I'd be upset with it. The difference is that with Humberto, I just don't care. With Dominic, I think I would care.
Do you think that's because we have such a – real quick, Liz. Tony, do you think that's because we have such a long-standing connection to Ray as WWE watchers that we kind of feel like we've seen Dominic grow up in the company, going back to, like, the 2005 ladder match between Ray and Eddie for his custody at SummerSlam?
No, realistically, the only reason why I'm okay with it is because that I think that it was a better story, especially with the continuous mentions of him. Like, you keep bringing him up, Ray. Like – what's going on, man?
All right, Liz, you were about to ask a question. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I wasn't going to ask a question. I was going to say that when Humberto came out, like it didn't click with me that it was Humberto. Like, I didn't recognize him without his goofy outfit on. Don't get mad at me, people. I don't like his gear. I don't like Buddy's gear. I could go on. We could have a whole podcast on his gear I don't like. But I was like, ooh, who's behind the mask? And then when it was Humberto, and I'm not knocking Humberto, because like I said before, I think he has a lot of talent. I was like, oh, it's Humberto. We're going back to that. So, like I don't know if I would have been like, oh, it's Dominic. But if I can, you know, if it was Dominic, I think I would have been a little bit more hyped, not because I'm so eager to see Dominic get involved in it. I'm really not. But because it would have been somebody fresh.
Tony, coming soon to the Reaction Chairshot Radio Network. All fear the New Yorker's opinion of your gear with Liz Puglisi.
Nice. You should. That'd be great.
All right, let's get to quick hits for Monday Night Raw here. Tony, you want to go ahead and tell everybody who Aleister Black faced in the Raw report?
My bad. Yeah, Tessa Blanchard faced Black. Black won.
If you don't get that reference, folks, Google it. That's all I'm going to say. Because I'm not getting involved in that train wreck of a situation.
I'm just really, you know, I mean, I get it. Kayfabe-wise, teaming with Seth Rollins should get you a win, especially if y'all cheat. But in what world do you beat someone multiple times for weeks on it, for at least three times, and then the following week you're facing a nobody, kicking them in the face, while that person that you beat three times is getting tag team championship gold? I don't know, man.
Didn't I just say that earlier? But anyways.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know who I kind of want to see go after Rollins and Buddy Murphy for the tag titles now, though? Aleister Black and Ricochet.
Sure. I mean, you know, Ricochet's got so much credibility right now.
It's an NXT watcher, and pretty much the only one amongst the three of us, I feel like there would be a level of impressive continuity being told there with Aleister teaming up with Ricochet.
But they teamed up a whole bunch of times on Raw, too, so it makes sense.
Yeah, look, they won the Dusty Tag Team Classic, which is running in NXT right now. They had the tag team title shot against the Authors of Pain, ironically enough. at one of the recent NXT takeovers. Oh, no, it wasn't the Authors of Pain. It was against the Viking Raiders, excuse me, which would make it even more make sense, because if they step in and take the Viking Raiders' place, that would give the Viking Raiders something else to be pissed off about. Okay, I'm doing their job for them. I need to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Tony's going to start yelling again. Speaking of Ricochet, Brock Lesnar punts him in the balls. That's basically what you need to know about tonight's Brock Lesnar appearance. I will say,
no,
I impressed that they showed up.
He cut a very, very intense promo too. Brock did.
Well, yeah, of course you can tell somebody that you're not squared after you kick him in the ball sack.
Not scared. That was his promo.
Excuse me. I believe he was hitting the lower testicular region.
Hmm.
Credit Dave Prazak. I don't mind seeing Brock on... I'm glad to see Brock on television each of the last couple of weeks here, because it makes the Royal Rumble seem more important, because they're actually shilling out to have the champion there in order to make him appear as though he's invested in what's going on the show around him. That being said, I think last week's use with Truth was much more impressive than this week's was with Ricochet, and that's kind of telling as to what they're doing with Ricochet, or I guess more specifically what they're not. Is it not, Liz?
I don't know. I'm a little lost on that one. I'm not ashamed, you know, to admit it. It was nice to see somebody come out, and somebody different actually come out, kind of call Brock out. The outcome was kind of insulting to Ricochet, you know, I guess. It doesn't do anything for him. I think it would have been, he would have looked better if there was like some type of little bit of a brawl, but of course they just had to give Brock someone to humiliate. Excuse me.
I hope your mom is okay as well. I heard her in the background.
Yeah, thanks.
Tony, same question. Do you think that last week's segment with R-Truth had more impact than this week's segment with Ricochet for Lesnar?
Oh, for sure. The character of R-Truth can withstand what happened to him. Also, he didn't get F5'd last week, right? It was just a clothesline.
Truth got clotheslined and then F5'd.
Okay. All right. I don't remember the F5.
They showed
it
in the video package that you probably weren't paying attention to.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, you're right. Okay. Well, it did. Ricochet is someone that they're trying to establish as something. I mean, I think, you know, I understand you don't want him to like fucking do a hurricane run off the ropes to Brock and, you know, but also it would get a nice little pop. And I think that there's no loss for Brock if something were to happen to him before the kick to the nuts. But there's so much loss to happen if nothing were to happen before the kick to the nuts. What did we get here that we didn't already know?
Brock is a bully and Ricochet is a bitch. Oh, wait, we already knew
right.
that.
Right. I mean, if we didn't, they just made it more prominent, and that's probably not the message they want to get across, really.
I agree. I'm not arguing with you. At the very least, like, Truth got to showcase his personality. Yeah, Ricochet gains a little bit from standing up to Lesnar, but he doesn't actually have any kind of physicality because he gets kicked in the balls and then Brock basically walks away. All right, we move on. Hold on, let's find what's next on the show. Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton. Liz, I'll let you take this one.
Pretty decent match. I mean, we all know I'm a big fan of Drew. Hold on one second. I seem to get less echo on the other side for some reason. That was a lie. You know, but I have to give it to Randy. Randy's last few years has always gotten a lot of shit about how he seems to like be bored and and phoning it in and just there for the paycheck, which is probably all really true, and I think he's even said that. But I think these past few months he's really upped his game, and he's been very entertaining and almost, you know, playful in some aspects. I enjoyed the match. I didn't think it was, you know, horrible. It wasn't a five-star classic, you know, by any means. I think they have some good chemistry together. And we all knew he was going to RKO him at the end there. And I did miss something somewhere along the line for the OC to be going after Drew. So, but I'll look that up later.
Last week on Raw, when McIntyre beat up the OC while they tried to get involved in the triple threat match, and then McIntyre pinned AJ with the, and then McIntyre pinned AJ as well.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, there are about a half a dozen different ways that they could go with Drew McIntyre for WrestleMania. Is McIntyre the most interesting character on the red brand right now?
I mean, I have to think about it, but he's up there. He's up there. And, you know, this little feud with Orton is helping him out a lot because, I mean, it really looks like they're just letting Orton and Drew do what they want, and it's coming off great. They're having a lot of fun in the ring with the promos. They're like, trying to one-up one another. They got AJ being a thorn in both their sides, but they're not friends. The chops in the middle of the ring, you can just tell they're, like, They're fucking with each other. They're like, I'm going to chop. We see it all the time in the indies. Like, you know, the boys are like just going to try to chop the shit out of each other. I remember there was a birthday amongst one of the wrestlers in one of the first indie shows that I ever went to. And they were in the middle of the ring, and it was before the bell. And everybody said happy birthday. And this is the first time I ever saw this. But every single wrestler that was there got to chop the birthday boy. And I made it a vow never to let anybody know when my birthday was, so long as I helped them set up.
If I may, for 1 second, I don't know if anybody listens to After the Bell with Corey or whatever it's called.
Corey Graves.
I don't. I know his name. I didn't know what the show was called, so I haven't really listened to it yet. But there was a clip that
After
I listened to with After the Bell with Drew, obviously, where he was saying that he thinks his character has been more relaxed and more connecting even more with the fans lately because they're actually letting him be more himself. He's being more Drew Galloway than Drew McIntyre. He says in the thing, he's like, I'm not the friendliest guy. He's like, but I'm not like the meanest guy. And they wanted to like try to force him to be like best friends with various people. And that didn't work for him because that's not how he is. So.
Yeah, he talks on the After the Bell interview about how the psychotic character didn't work for him because he didn't feel like that necessarily registered with his actual persona. And he also mentioned the fact that he'll never refer to himself as the future anymore because he feels like eventually the future had to become the present or otherwise he's the past. It's a really good listen if you guys get a chance to. After the Bell is actually pretty entertaining on a almost weekly basis here. I know I give Graves a lot of shit for trying to get himself over at the expense of a talent on occasion, but After the Bell is actually a really good listen. Back to the match itself real quick here. Tony.
Yo.
What do you think is the going rate for an indie worker to take a Claymore kick on the floor?
I don't know. Do you know the rates for WWE? Do you know how much they pay? I guess I could ask. I know that was a joke, but I would be really interested.
Depends on if it's a physicality or a non-physicality.
Right, of course.
Because I think backstage segment or like the conga line, you get like $50. And then if it's like an in-ring or something, it depends on the style of match and your effort in that match as well. Because I know there was a story a while back, and I know I'm going completely off on a tirade here, but there was a enhancement talent that did a match a while back, and the going rate back then was like $150. But this was back when in the early old days of the company, and Brutus Beefcake was still there, and fuck Ed Leslie, but that's beside the point. But he was still there, and they did a thing where Leslie cut the guy's hair, and Vince was so thoroughly entertained by it that he doubled his payday and gave him another $150 for it. So I'm
My
guessing
life's
like
complete
the goal
knowing
right
that.
I know. I'm the king of useless information on this podcast. Tony, Becky may have lost me as a fan today. She insulted Oscar's YouTube channel.
That bitch.
That's what I said. Did we lose Tony? We did. He got
muted. I
don't
think so.
I
actually like Oscar's YouTube channel. I think it's hysterical and very informative in a lot of ways.
Tony, did you hear what I said before your call dropped?
Yeah. Yeah, I hope that people say Oscar has a YouTube channel and then they go watch it and they realize that she knows how to speak English and then get super upset. That's what I hope.
Because her YouTube channel is absolutely adorbs. Like, I'm not going to lie. I was kind of like low key crushing on Oscar after watching her YouTube videos.
Super cute.
Anyway, Becky is in the ring against Kairi Sane as a preview match for the match with Asuka this Sunday at the Rumble. Becky picks up the victory with the disarmor at 9 minutes and a tap actual clean submission victory. Tony, are you surprised they didn't go the obvious disqualification route?
Nah, they want to show that Becky can make an Asian chick tap out.
Jesus. The views and opinions of Tony Acero do not necessarily reflect the rest of here at the Chair Shot Radio Network. Liz?
Yes. I didn't actually hear what you asked, Tony.
I said, are you surprised that they didn't go with the obvious DQ finish?
No, probably because the obvious DQ finish wasn't obvious to me. So, I guess you would think that Asuka would get involved and cause Kairi to lose. But, I want to be nice and try to think that they're trying to get away from too much obvious stuff.
They aired it on SmackDown. I didn't discuss it there because I figured we'd discuss it here. Tony, do you have any memories at all of Rocky Johnson?
No.
I vaguely remember him being in the ring with The Rock when The Rock made his WrestleMania debut as Rocky Maivia, but that's about the extent of it for me. Liz, anything?
I mean, I do because I'm older and I, you know, when I was growing up watching wrestling, it was actually, even though we have a ton of it on now, you know, through cable and different things, it was a lot of wrestling on when I was growing up. So I saw quite a few of his matches over the years. And he was everything that they said he was. He was a really entertaining, you know, talented wrestler. And he died so suddenly. Which, you know, just tells people that they really need to take the flu, you know, seriously, especially when you're an older individual.
I personally did not know the man. I did not get to see anything of him. That being said, I do, on my behalf at least, and I would imagine I possibly speak for both of my colleagues here, I send our condolences to the Johnson family. And I second Liz's discussion there to make sure you guys take your health seriously. You never know when the littlest thing can turn into the biggest of problems.
Mm-hmm.
My stomach almost killed me 10 years ago. I don't know if I've ever shared that story on the air before. I had a really bad stomach ache one day. I ignored it because it had happened before and I didn't think anything of it. And then it kept hurting and it kept hurting to the point that anything that I did to try to fix it wasn't working. So I finally called and I made an appointment and it turned out that I had gallstones that on a gallbladder that was about to burst.
Mm-hmm.
That would have killed me if that had happened.
Mm-hmm.
From toxic shock. So make sure you guys take your health seriously.
People like to joke about the flu, and we'll get back on track in a second, and the flu shot and everything, but there's so many strains, and, you know, the littlest, like, nobody's allowed in my house except for my mom. I mean, you hear a cough, you have a lung condition. If you don't have the flu shot, you don't come in my house. To many, it's deadly, even to somebody who's healthy.
Tony?
Do you remember how we were remember how we were discussing a couple of weeks ago about the Street Profits doing these backstage bits that were going nowhere and how they were completely out of character for them?
God, I don't... Yeah.
Yeah, they're back.
Mm-hmm.
This would be your chance to rant and rave if you wish to take it.
I'm not gonna bite. This is all gonna culminate in some stupid ass match at WrestleMania against the Weekend Update guys, and I didn't even cover it in the report.
I wish I wouldn't have covered it right now during the podcast. Liz, any thoughts on this Weekend Update bullshit?
I don't watch SNL, so, like, it didn't, like, really connect with me. I knew what it was mocking and everything, but it didn't. I'd rather them see them do something with, like, you know, like, fake little wrestling brand. They all dress up and, like, make videos of with, like, Fandango and Cena or somebody, like, the announcers. Yeah, I would have liked them to do something like that rather than this. This didn't really have, like, a couple of, like, chuckle moments, but it's... I don't watch SNL, so it didn't really resonate with me.
Speaking of things past their expiration date, Liz, Eric Rowan. I'm over
Jesus
it.
Christ.
Your thoughts?
Yep. Well, I don't even want to start because of the...
Tony? You're not taking the bait on this one either?
Nah.
I'm sure Matt Hardy will very much enjoy when he gets to show up on Wednesday nights on TNT. That's all I'm going to say about it. Because Matt is too good for this shit.
Let me just say this. He is too good for this shit, but why does everybody... He's not fucking Hardy. I mean, I don't think... Even if he's under a contract, I don't think he's one of those who's like, okay, you know, be forced into, you know, doing something. I think he's a guy that's willing to put, you know, other people over. And I think that even though he doesn't want to, like, freely admit it, he has some, like, physical limitations. So it was a stupid-ass match for him to be in, a disgusting match for Matt Hardy to be in. But I don't think he's necessarily someone, I mean, what the fuck do I know? I don't know anything. Is going to be like, oh, yeah, he's, you know, waiting to go to AEW. I think Matt has the background to be able to say, okay, yeah, you're doing shit. I'm just going to write out my contract at home. I just don't think he is that type of person necessarily.
No. But, I mean, I do think he's a person that's willing to put people over when he feels like it's a good idea. And, obviously, this isn't a good idea. Nobody cares what the fuck's going on.
Like, it started with an intriguing concept, but the further and further they've gone with it, the more and more off the rails it's gone. And now, with Eric Rowan attacking whatever's inside of the thing at ringside, now we're going to end up getting PETA involved. And God forbid the World Wildlife Fund have to get involved again, because they've already beaten Vince's ass once.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, a 3.5-minute mixed tag match was our main event tonight on Raw. Okay. Now, I know that sounded very condescending, and to be honest, a little bit it was. The match itself actually wasn't bad. It's just, it's the main event, and it went 3.5 fucking minutes. Maybe that's why the match wasn't bad, because it only went 3.5 minutes. What did you make of the main event, Tony?
So, you know, we saw some video packages of Liv talking about how she was someone she didn't want to be, and she was going to come out as the real her, and she was going to show us who the real her was, and it was going to be a complete and total makeover, like better than Emelina, and just something that was completely different. And then she came out tonight in like a thinly related gear to Harley Quinn. Now, I'm not saying it was on purpose, but it just, ugh, that's about as much thought as they put into this entire storyline.
Alexa was a way harder Harley. I mean, they did have a lot of advertisements for that Harley Quinn and Birds of Prey movie on USA during the course of Raw, so maybe it was an intentional video tie-in. Who knows? Overall, what did you think of the match?
The last, like, 30 seconds was okay. It was a sick-ass spear. I'll give him that. But you continue to make Rusev look dumb. Even Lashley look dumb. Don't ever give Lana a microphone. Liv, I think that we all saw more potential in her than apparently the WWE does. I mean, maybe they think this is a promotion. Maybe they think this is, like, you're in the main event of Raw. This is a big deal, but, man.
Liz, your thoughts on the main event for tonight's episode of Raw?
That's pretty much it. I mean, they had more commercial breaks and video packages and reminding us of the friggin' build-up than they had a match. I mean, I think Rusev is going to more of a disservice than that is, you know, whatever. I'm not going to lie, I didn't really even really pay attention to it. I started to, my eyes would bother me. I started to close my eyes at that point. And that's why I was so late dialing in, because I fell asleep. That's what I thought of the event.
I want to think that this is going somewhere with Rusev, to the point that Rusev is going to be a credible character again at some point. But, wherever it's going, it's taking a long-ass time to get there. And maybe that's just how the modern wrestling fan is. Maybe we're spoiled on the fact that we don't have the super extended builds like we used to have. Like, I'm going through and watching the old episodes of Raw and stuff, and you have like a 4 or 5 month program at a time in order to get from one major pay-per-view to another. So you see like intermittent interactions between the two participants without giving too much away. And maybe that's something that they're trying to do here, but I don't think the fans care. Maybe they did for a while, but I don't think they do now. And especially not after giving them 3.5 minutes in the main event slot on Monday Night Raw. I like 3 of the 4 people in this feud. I like Rusev. I like Lashley. I can tolerate 3 out of the 4 people in this feud. I can tolerate Liv. Lana needs to get the fuck off my television. It's X-Pac heat at this point.
If I may,
but
it's just one of.
Go ahead, Liz.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I thought you were done. I apologize. It's just one of those storylines. I'm gonna I ranted about Miz and Dolph feuding because it didn't have any credibility, because we all know how good friends we are. Because 10 minutes later, he's on the show with him, right? And the whole New Day breaking up probably would never work because. That they say it themselves, they're such good friends, it wouldn't be believable. It's really hard for us to believe that Lana and Rusev are divorced when, if you follow them on social media, their Instagram stories are taking place in the same house with the same people and the same set of dogs. Obviously it's TV, it's a storyline, but when the people are actually married in real life, and you see them in other places, you know, together, because they're such horrible, or at least she is such a horrible actor. Not that I'm any better, I am not. It just, you can't suspend, you know, your belief like we're supposed to as hard. It's aside from the fact that she screeches. But,
Liz, I 100% believe you're a better actress than Lana is.
Yeah, you
and that wraps
to
up tonight.
Every week.
No, it's the damnedest thing. Tony's microphone stopped working. Ain't that a bitch? That wraps up tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. Let's go ahead and get into the final reaction, shall we?
Okay.
Favorite match or moment from the last 2 weeks, Tony? Or from the last two episodes, Raw and SmackDown?
Yeah, I really liked the Drew versus Orton match. It was short, but they did a lot of things right, and they had a lot of fun.
Liz?
It would be too easy for me to say Randy and Drew, because everybody knows I'm a Drew fangirl, but I actually really enjoyed Kane, Fiend, and Daniel.
I'm going to make it three different choices here. I'm going to go with the Raw Tag Team title match tonight between Seth and Buddy against the Viking Raiders. Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with the fact that they put the belts on Seth and Buddy, but the match itself was really good. And it was nice to see the Viking Raiders finally get an opportunity to showcase what they were capable of as a tag team on Raw rather than facing a couple of enhancement talent. The least favorite match or moment from the last two episodes, Tony, your Greg Watchery of the week.
In any other week, I'd just say Lana and Lashley call it a day, but the Street Profits thing really bothered me. It wasn't funny.
Liz?
Least favorite moment. I'm going to go with... I have a tie, but I'm going to go with Lesnar and the whole Ricochet getting beat down for apparently no reason other than to have Ricochet on air and give Brock somebody to beat up. I just think it didn't, as bad as Matt's whole thing was, I think it just was a huge disservice and made absolutely no sense whatsoever.
I'm going to go with the Alexa Bliss and Sonya Deville match from SmackDown. Because nothing says Viva La Revolution like two-minute match where the prime focus of the match is a participant that isn't in the match and a dude who's not even in the division.
Mm-hmm. Forgot about that. Excellent choice.
Show ratings for Raw and SmackDown, Tony. SmackDown first.
SmackDown, I want to say 6 out of 10. Raw. Any other night, I'd probably say 7, but because it's the last Raw before Mania, or sorry, Rumble, and I didn't feel anything. so I'm going to say 6 out of 10.
Liz, SmackDown and Raw rating.
Shockingly, I agree with Tony on SmackDown. It's definitely a 6. And Roar, I'm going to go a little bit higher and give them, I'll be slightly generous and give them a 7. Because, I mean, there was a couple little things about that main event was, you know, horrible and whatever, but it wasn't like so bad. So I'll give it a 7.
By and large, I actually really enjoyed SmackDown, so I gave SmackDown a 7.5. I thought that there were two really good stories told throughout the course of the show in order to get to where they're going with the tag team title situation as well as the main event scene. I thought Roman and Robert was actually very good for the time that they were given for that match there and the story that they had to tell during the course of it. So I gave SmackDown a 7.5. I gave tonight's episode of Raw a 6.5. I thought that there were a couple of really good matches, but there were definitely some more confusing things that threw down the rating a little bit, such as having black on television for like all of 30 seconds. And like Tony mentioned earlier, that Street Profits segment that went absolutely fucking nowhere. Can I give credit real quick for one thing that I forgot to talk about while we were doing the quick hits discussion? I want to give credit real quick to Mojo Rawley and the 24/7 segment tonight on Raw. I actually thought that was very entertaining. And probably one of the better things they've done with the 24/7 title since it's come back. Tony, you've been a long-standing critic of the 24/7 title here. What did you think of that segment backstage with Mojo and the Singh brothers?
Well, it's kind of like what I told you last week, that I knew this was going to happen. they want to take a slightly serious approach with this, and they also want to give Mojo something to do. I've been kind of an apologist for Mojo Rawley. I'm hoping that this proves me correct in that there's something that he has there. I just don't know how to properly explain it.
Liz, same question. Your thoughts on the 24/7 backstage segment with Mojo getting attacked by the Singh brothers and single-handedly beating them down?
To be honest, I missed it to the very end. I was away from my television. I only saw the very last of it, but just I'll have to go back and watch it. But offhand, I don't really have too much of a problem with it. I love the Singh brothers. I'm okay-ish, you know, with Mojo, but I mean, how often have we seen the Singh brothers get beaten up by one person? That was not, like, inconceivable, unfortunately.
To be fair, Randy Orton made them his bitch for the better part of, like, 3 months a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying.
All right, Tony, who's your MVP for this week's episode of Raw and SmackDown?
I'm going to give it to Drew.
I feel like Liz is mad at you now because you took her answer. Liz?
No, I was actually thinking, well, is there anybody else? There's nobody really, and, you know, not knocking these people, that jumped out and, like, really stole the show. So I'm just going to give it to Drew because he's Drew.
I'm going to give my MVP to Jomo, to John Morrison. Strong effort against Big E in his first match back, working his way back into the storyline scene and getting back into the mix of things here. We saw Morrison doing a pretty good job on the independent scene to kind of reinvent himself as Johnny Impact, as Johnny Mundo in Lucha Underground, as Johnny named that promotion on a couple of various other independent sets. So he's proven over the course of those 8 years that he's got the goods. Whether or not it translates to the WWE universe and the WWE creative staff remains to be seen. But I'd say he's off to a pretty strong start here with the match that he had against Big E, as well as the character work that he's done with Miz over the last 2 weeks. I will say that Starship Pain needs to go because he never hits that fucking move clean. He almost kneed Big E in the face on Friday. Tony, usually we do full pay-per-view predictions. Nobody fucking cares about any other match on this pay-per-view except for two, so I want your predictions for the two Rumble matches. Who you got?
Dude, I don't fucking know. Shit. Drew McIntyre and Sasha Banks.
Liz?
I think it's way too obvious that Brock wins, so it means he probably will, but my pick is surprise, surprise, Drew, for the men. And I'm going to go with are the NXT women in the Rumble, or is it just Raw and SmackDown?
I believe it's 10 of each for both Rumbles, if I recall correctly. I think they said it would be 10 each.
I'm going to go with Shayna. Wait, yeah, I'm going to go with Shayna then. Because if it's Charlotte, I might just, like, if she's had a real match, I might just friggin' cry.
If it's Charlotte, I'm boycotting that match at Mania. Like, legit, I'm not watching that match. I'll go get food during that match. I almost hate to say it, but I think Roman's the obvious choice for the men's Rumble.
No
way. To set him up for a match with Wyatt at WrestleMania. And you can tell the underdog story of him coming back from having the match earlier in the night. I do agree with Liz, though. I am picking Shayna Baszler for the Women's Rumble, although there are speculations that a certain rowdy one will be in the Women's Rumble as well. So if she shows up, all bets are off. And now Liz is pissed. Are you actually going to get to watch the Rumble live on Sunday, Tony?
Yeah, I took the day off.
Nice. Liz, are you going to be able to watch the Rumble live on Sunday?
With two fantasy leagues and a Royal Rumble pool, God, I sure hope so.
Speaking of which, Tony's in that Royal Rumble pool. I am not. I am poor.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. Last question for you guys. Any interest in the NXT Win Worlds Collide special on Saturday night? Tony?
I mean, I'm always interested. I just can't. I don't have time to watch them.
Would you cherry pick a match or two if you hear good things about it? Like, the main event for this show sounds incredible with Undisputed Era versus Imperium. And then just this past week on NXT, they added DIY versus Mustache Mountain to the card as well.
Yeah, I usually watch suggestions. Andrew every now and then will tell me what matches to watch.
Liz, same question. Any interest in When Worlds Collide on Saturday? Will you be watching, or would you cherry pick afterwards?
I am hoping to watch. I do try to catch their big shows, the takeovers and such. I always follow along in the Chair Shot chat. The guys always tag me if they know I don't usually get to watch it as it's going on. But if I do miss it, I generally go back and watch as much of it as possible.
We'll definitely be opening the show with discussion of the Rumble next week here on the podcast. We'll talk a little bit about the go-home episode of SmackDown, but I'll be perfectly honest with you both. We're probably going to focus on the Rumble and the fallout thereof next week. So that'll be something for everybody out there to look forward to. In addition, next week's episode of the show is the official start on the road to WrestleMania here, as the Royal Rumble is the traditional start for that road. And next Monday's episode will be the first one after the Rumble itself. Tony, where can people find you online?
Pornhub.com. Oh, for
most
okay.
of the time.
411mania.com.
/wrestling. Are you doing anything with the Eminem album in the music section?
No. That's just for me to enjoy.
What are your thoughts so far on the album?
So, just like Sasha and AJ, I have a undying love for the man known as Marshall Mathers III. He could do no wrong. Everything he says and does is beautiful. But when I take a step back and I look at it from an unbiased point of view, there were a few tracks where he's just talking about stuff he's been talking about for the past 20 years, so it gets kind of old. However, if you don't mind the subject matter, the very obvious ploy of trying to tie himself to, you know, mass shooters and murderers and whatnot, then you end up finding that he still is one of the biggest and best masters of word wizardry that you can ever hear. The amount of puns and wordplay and just complete manipulation of the English language is unparalleled. No one can match him. And then you listen to Godzilla and hear him rap faster than fucking anyone alive, and it's just mind-blowing.
Guinness World Record, 209 words in 31 seconds.
Yeah, he's great.
Aw, Puddin.
I miss her.
Liz,
do
you listen to any Eminem songs?
I don't know why you're laughing when you said that. The answer is no, not in some time. I'm not, because I don't actually listen to a lot of music right now, which is like really sucky. But no, I mean, I have in the past. I listened to a wide variety of. I grew up in the era of, you know, hair bands in the 80s and heavy metal. I do know that he is. Too many, to all, pretty much everything that, you know, Tony said. I don't live under a rock.
I should probably not laugh at Liz, because after all, she's not going to take it anymore.
Yeah.
This is where I hang up, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty much what Tony would do in this situation. You have been listening to The Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. For Liz Puglisi, Tony Acero. I'm Harry Broadhurst. Thank you for listening. We join you again next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. with the official start on the road to WrestleMania here on The Reaction, a presentation of the ChairShot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com.
Deuces, bitches.
That was your cue. Thanks for listening, everybody. Okay, Tony's gone. I'd play a song here in order to wrap up the show, but I feel the need to do something real quick here. Guys, I apologize. I was off tonight. And I'm talking to both the co-host as well as the listeners.
I don't think you were off tonight. I mean, I know it was, like, super cranky, and I had some technical difficulties that threw everything off, but I don't think you were off. I mean, you stumbled over your words a little bit early on, but that was, like, no point.
Yeah, but that's not something I usually do when I'm doing a show, and I'm not trying to make excuses for it or anything, but it's been a rough couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
My anxiety issues have been kind of kicking my tail the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like not in my proper headspace right now. But I just wanted to apologize if the show sounded off to everybody, and I promise to try to do better next week. Liz, where can people find you online? Since I forgot to ask.
That's okay. Twitter is LizzyP 224. Instagram, if you want to see a bunch of dog pictures and what we cook, is the same thing. And if you want to watch a fat person try to lose weight, it's 2 Liz Fit Liz with an underscore between each word on Instagram. And come join the chair shot where you can talk to me anytime.
Hey, you know what else you can do if you're on, was it Twitter where you got the response, or was it Instagram?
Twitter.
If you follow Liz on Twitter, you'll see the former Jack Swagger congratulating her on her progress.
Yes. That's so sweet. He actually follows me. I was so, oh my God. I had my fangirl moment.
I don't think I have any celebrity followers. In fairness, I hardly ever use Twitter at HEB the Eagle.
Yeah, I use it a lot.
Like, I send out a message once every, like, 5 months or so.
Keep it active.
All right, she's Liz.
Bye.
She's Liz. I'm Harry. Thanks for listening, everybody. You have been listening to The Reaction here on the ChairShot Radio Network. Join us again next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. Eastern as Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and Liz Puglisi begin the road to WrestleMania here on The Reaction, a presentation of the ChairShot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.